We're holding Parshat Toledot, and our Parsha takes us from Avraham into Yitzhak. We're entering Yitzhak's life after Yitzhak has been married in last week's Parsha. And we are going to be faced with the threat of the Jewish nation's extinction at its very beginning. Yitzhak is going to contemplate giving the blessings over to Esav. We're going to see Yitzhak getting blind towards the end of the Parsha. We're going to see Yitzhak praying to have children in the beginning of the Parsha. Finally, he will have. His wife becomes pregnant. She has twins. It's a very difficult labor. She wonders what's going on here, and she doesn't ask her husband. Wonder of wonders, a woman has a question and she doesn't ask her husband. So she goes and seeks out God in a Beis Medrash. She asks Shem and Aver, and they tell her, you have two nations in your stomach, and they're fighting, and ultimately the younger one will serve the older one for a long, long time. And when she finally gives birth, she has twins, and the first one comes out all red. They wonder, is he okay? Is he healthy? And they do not perform bris. And the second one comes out, and he's holding his heel, and his name is Yaakov. Yitzhak is 60 years old, and Rivka is?
23, 34.
Wait,
who knows?
So, they circumcision on Yaakov?
So Yaakov is circumcised, and Esav is not, correct?
Why?
The children grow up. Esav becomes a murderer. He murders the man who tried to murder his grandfather, Nimrod. Nimrod tried to kill his grandfather Avram. He kills him, and Avram passes away, and Yitzchak is in mourning, and Yaakov makes a special lentil soup for his father, like mourners always eat. People who just lost their relative, they eat round foods to remind themselves, just like a circle is whole, has no opening, so too a person initially should be silent. He shouldn't open his mouth. When he loses a relative, after he digests it, then he should start talking. And Esav comes in from the field, and he asks him, give me some of that red stuff. I'm red, give me the red food. And everyone says, he even calls himself red. Okay, he gets the name Edom. And Yaakov says, I'll give you the food, but first let's talk business. I want the rights to the firstborn. I want to inherit double from our father. And Esav says, hey, you think I have no reason to want the rights of the firstborn. Dad's going to outlive me. I live hunting, I live fighting. Chances are I'll die long before Dad dies. I have no interest in this firstborn rights. You give me the lentil soup and we have a deal. So Yaakov says, fine, swear to me that when the time comes to inherit Dad, you won't go back on it and say things otherwise. And Esav takes the vow. He sells the rights to the firstborn to Yaakov, and he sits down and has a meal. He eats with Yaakov, he eats bread, lentil soup, he drinks, he leaves, and he continues in his way of mocking the rights to the firstborn, which is why Yaakov initially wanted to take it. He said, if this guy mocks the right to inherit twice from our father, the right to serve God, the firstborns used to be the ones who were the priests, he doesn't have a right to that. There's a famine, and this is the second famine in world history. Yitzhak travels out to Avimelech, the one who his father had made a pact with. Maybe he'll help him out. And God tells him, don't go down to Egypt. You got to stick around here. And I'll be with you. I'll bless you. I'm going to give you these lands just as I promised your father. And here we have God clearly stating that Yitzhak is the continuum from Avram. And you guys will multiply, you and your children. Because Avram kept my mitzvos, we'll have to discuss what mitzvos Avram kept. And Yitzhak lives over there. The people ask him, where's your wife? We see you have two kids. He says, Rebecca, she's my sister, my wife. I got a different wife somewhere else. He's scared they might kill her for Rivka. She's good looking. Time passes, and Avimelech, the king, looks through the window. He sees them joking around like a husband and wife. He calls Yitzhak in, and he says, that's your wife? Why did you tell me she was your sister? And Yitzhak says, I was scared of getting killed. I walk into town. Everyone's asking, who's the good-looking girl? I was scared. Avimelech says, you know, I was careful. I remembered the story of your father, Avram, but, you know, someone else might have messed up with her. Avimelech gives a decree, no one's allowed to touch this man and his wife. And Yitzhak plants, and even though it's a difficult year of famine, he prospers. And he prospers with things that are seen externally, with his sheep, with his cattle, with his servants, and everyone sees. He's like Trump. He starts having a lot of land, and he starts having a lot of servants, and he starts having a lot of sheep. And the pasuk doesn't say he has a lot of money, he has a lot of wealth. But it's wealth that's visible. And so the Philistines start being jealous of him. And they respected Avram so long as he was alive. When Avram passes, when Avram's passed away, they start filling all the wells that he had dug. And Avimelech comes to Yitzhak and he says, look, you seem more wealthy than I am. And it's not fitting for a country that it has a person that seems more wealthy than the king. Leave. And Yitzchak leaves. Yeah.
Where's Gerar in the map?
I don't know. It's part of Philistine territory. But I don't know. Okay. We have maps over there. Well, we could look. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know exactly where. Okay. Guys, I think it's visible on the camera. I think it doesn't look so well for the, on the Bat Machon. So. Yitzchak redigs all the wells. There are fights about the wells. The shepherds say that water is ours. Finally, they reach one well that there's peace. And we're going to have to discuss why the Torah gives us all these details. Yitzchak's a little worried. He's had an issue with Avimelech. Now he's having issues with the shepherds. So God appears to him and says, don't worry, I'm with you. He erects an altar. And now Avimelech comes, and this is, so to speak, a fulfillment of what God said. Everything's going to be all right. Avimelech comes and wants to make a pact with him. He says, look, we didn't harm you, and we're going to discuss what's going on here. And he says, let's maintain the pact our forefathers had. They make a party, they make the pact, and they leave in peace. Esav's 40 years old, he takes on some more wives, and these wives are bad daughter-in-laws to their in-laws, to Yitzchak and Rivka. Yitzchak's getting old, he can't see well. We're going to have to discuss why Yitzchak, of all the forefathers, suddenly can't see well. And he calls his big son Esav and he tells him, I'm getting old, I don't know when I'm going to die. You lost your rights to the firstborn, so I'm going to give you back some of that. I don't know when I'm going to die, so bring me the food. I don't want a situation where you're left without anything. I'm going to bless you. You make me good food.
No, wait. He didn't know that he lost his firstborn rights.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to bless you before I die. And Rivka hears Yitzchak saying this, and she says, you know, Yitzchak became blind because he was Matzdik Rasha. He was too good to the Rasha, he was too good to Esav. If he fulfills the end of this Pasuk, Malshiat Tzadik, that he harms the Tzadik Yaakov by giving these blessings to Esav, then who knows what's going to happen to him. I have to intervene here. I assumed he knew that prophecy I got when I was pregnant, that that we have two different nations coming out of me, Berav Yavod Tzair. So I see he doesn't. He thinks that Esav is supposed to get all these things. So she calls Yaakov, her son who isn't so young himself, and she tells him, I've heard what your dad's going to do, and I want you to bring me sheep. I'm going to make your father young sheep, which young goats, which taste like venison. They taste like deer. And I'll make your father the food he likes. You'll bring it to him, and he'll bless you. And Yaakov says, my brother's hairy, I'm smooth. My father will call me in like dad always does. He'll caress my cheek. He'll kiss me. I'll end up being cursed. And she says, nah, don't worry. You know what happens when your dad's upset. He says, you got that from your mother's family. He'll curse me. He won't curse you. So you go do what I say. He brings her everything. She gives him all the food. On his way, the angel Michal meets him and gives him wine from Gan Eden. He brings it. He's wearing Esav's special clothes, the clothes that have the drawings of every animal in the world and every bird in the world on them that Adam took out of the Garden of Eden. And the story continues. Yitzchak suspects something. He doesn't figure it out. He blesses him. Yaakov's on his way out. He hides behind the door. He sees Esav coming in from the light. Esav doesn't see him. It's dark in the room. Yitzchak's blind. So Esav walks right past him, and then Yaakov slips out. And Esav says, Dad, get up. I got food. And Yitzchak gets scared. He gets even more scared than he was at the Akedah. We're going to have to discuss that. Now he has a charada gdola. He has a great fear. And he says, who brought me all this food? And I see that the blessing, God was with me to bless him. Gam baruch yeh, it worked. And when Esav hears this, he yells out, and he yells bitterly, and he says, bless me too. And his father says, your brother must have tricked you, because the blessing couldn't have worked with anyone else. I said, I'm blessing my son. Esav says, the name Yaakov is very fitting. He really tricked me twice. He took my rights to the firstborn, now he took my blessing. Did you leave me nothing over? And Yitzchak finally gives him a blessing. He says, you'll have sustenance from the land, and when you go to war, you won't lose. But you'll be subservient to your brother unless he treats you too harshly when you're suffering under him. Then you'll be able to break free. And Esav maintains an enmity towards Yaakov. He makes believe he's okay because he wants to kill Yaakov. Rivka tells Yaakov, you gotta go. I know Esav's gonna murder you the day his father dies. You never know when that'll happen. You gotta get out of here. And she tells Yitzchak, what do we want more daughter-in-laws like Esav has? We need girls from our family. And Yitzchak calls Yaakov and he sends him out to inherit the land. Esav sees that his parents don't like the girls he married, so he doesn't divorce them. Takes a few more wives. And we end the parasha. Back to the beginning of the parasha. Avram had two children. He had Yitzchak and Yishmael. One might think there's room to doubt. Who are Avram's? Who's the rightful inheritor of Avram's blessings? And so our parasha begins, Ve'ele toldos Yitzchak min Avram, Avraham holides Yitzchak. Avram bore Yitzchak. It's very clear. Avram had one son who was continuing his way, and that was Yitzchak. And Avram spent many years with Sarah without having children. And finally, when he did have a child, it was after she had been in Avimelech's home. So the way the world works is that whenever there's room to make fun, people make fun. And this isn't a positive thing. The word letz is a gematria of 120. The word amalek is a gematria of 240. Twice letz is two is amalek. Leitzanei Adar, the jokers of the generation, were saying, it's not Avram's son. Must have come from the night she was with Avimelech. Now, Avimelech, when he freed Sarah, he said something to her. He said, I'm giving you all this massive jewelry and gifts, and let it cover your eyes. Avimelech was a little bit upset about what had happened. Here he's getting punished, and he was tricked. So Avimelech also wanted things to go less than smoothly for Sarah. He curses her. He says, you guys hid things from my eyes. Let things be covered from your eyes. Let you have an offspring who gets blinded and his curse comes true. That's why Yitzchak gets blind at the end of our parasha. And he gives her a bunch of gifts because he's hoping that the message will be, I spent so many years with Avram and what has he given me? And I spent one night with Avimelech, and look what he's given me.
But she didn't get to...
did anything happen that night? Did anyone know if anything happened that night? So he claimed, if I give you all these gifts, people will say, it's not that he was with her and he said, it's not worth it, he let her go. But rather, I'm giving her all these gifts. Obviously, she's a worthwhile person. But there wasn't really room for people to joke, but jokers don't need room to joke. Avram showed he could father a child. He had Yishmael. He had the children from the Pilagshim. Sarah, she had a child. She nursed other children. But God made it so to answer up even the late son. He made it that Yitzchak looked identical to Avram. So much so that Avram prayed. He said, God, Yitzchak walks into the room. People stand up. They think it's me. Make me look different. And that's why Avram became old. He started looking old because he prayed for it. He said, I don't want to look like Yitzchak. Yeah.
How can it be that
Nope. So Chazal say we learn from Avimelech, the Olam al Tehiki lilat ediot kala beinecha. The curse of a simple person should never be simple in your eyes. Even a person like Avimelech, his curse comes true. From there we derive that we have to take everyone's curse into account. And everyone's blessing as well. Hashem made the world in a way, brit kultal asfatayim. God made a pact with the lips. The lips are what signify humanity. Our ability to talk is what God gave us to be different than the animals. That's why man is called midaber, the one who speaks. And God made it that our speech in prayer and in communication with one another, that's godly.
But when you don't deserve a curse, it doesn't hit you.
No. If you don't deserve to get smacked, could I get up and smack you? That's a complicated philosophical question. So in a few minutes we're going to discuss whether Yitzchak deserved it or not and why. But the fact that a curse can harm a person, we derive from this story. So Yitzchak looks identical to Avram, and at 40 years old he marries Rivka, Rebecca, who's like a second cousin to him, Rivka at that point was either 3 or 14, it's unclear. And after having 10 years without having children...
Excuse me, 3 or 14?
Yeah. Right, there are two opinions as to whether she was 3 or 14.
Why are there two opinions?
Because if she was born directly following the Akedah, then she would be 3. But we have another medrash that says she lived to be 127 years old. She lived the same amount of years as Caliph. And then if we work the math backwards, going back from when she died, and we know when she died, and we work backwards from the years until here, then she would be 14. That's why we have the two different years. It depends on which medrash you're going to go with. That she was 14, yeah. Yeah. That's easier to swallow.
No,
but that's last week's parsha. Mm-hmm. We didn't get to deal with it, but that, yeah.
3 years old is my life.
Sorry, but he's waiting, yeah.
The Medrash says that the years of Caliph's life, parallel the years of Rivka's life. Where does that come from? That's a side
comment. Where is that Medrash? I don't remember, but you could see it in the Das Akenim, in the beginning of the parsha. He quotes it. There are three people, Rivka, Kalev, and one other person. I don't remember who. They all lived the same number of years.
Sarah.
Okay.
127 also.
So maybe it's more than 127. Maybe I'm not remembering correctly. Maybe it's 147. I don't remember. Okay. So she's having a difficult pregnancy. And she's saying, this is so hard. Why am I alive? I wish I were dead. Guys, get used to it. That's the way people sometimes react. And she goes and asks. She goes and asks. Eov said it too, so men too. She goes and asks, what does God want from her? What's going on here? She feels she's going by holy places. One kid's kicking to go, get out. She goes by Tuma places. Again, there are kicks to get out. Finally, she hears she's going to have twins. And now she's heard that it's normal that she's suffering like this because twins is difficult to carry. And this is an allusion to the wars they're going to have in the future. And then her pregnancy calms down after God tells her this. She does not bother going back to Yitzchak and telling him what she was told. And here the one understanding is that she felt he's such a great person, he's a bigger prophet than the people I went to. If they knew, he for sure knows. And she made a mistake. She discovers this mistake when Yitzchak calls Esav in to give him the blessing, and then it's too late. The other understanding, another understanding is that she didn't ask him for permission before going to ask. So when she came back, she felt a little bit uncomfortable. And out of modesty, she didn't want to say, hey, we had a question. I went to the rabbi, I asked the question, this is the answer I got. So either way, Yitzchak, at this point, according to some, is not cognizant of this prophecy, that these two are going to be competing forces in the world, and that the younger one is really going to end up rising to the top. She gives birth, and the elder one, it comes out red. Now, when the child is red, so sometimes, often that's a sign that his blood hasn't evolved properly, what the Gemara calls it hasn't been absorbed in the body properly. Like Rabbi Natan Abavli taught us, you don't circumcise a child at this state. Like a woman who tried the first child and he died, and I think twice she tried and the children died, and then Rabbi Natan came and said, you don't circumcise your children when they come out red. Wait till they get to a normal color. And when they finally got to a normal color, they called him Natan, Hashem Natan Abavli. And Yisrael Dov Libo, when he had a child, so the rabbis going with this ruling, told them, wait, the child needs to be a little stronger. His color has to be a little bit better. And when the child finally had a circumcision, they called him Natan Chaim. Natan, based on this Gemara. So Yitzchak, many, many years before the Gemara, sees this baby, Esav. He's all red. Says, we can't give the kid a circumcision. So they wait 2 years. And after 2 years that it doesn't get better, Yitzchak says, okay, I guess this is his natural color. And then Yitzchak says, well, my dad circumcised me at 8 and Yishmael at 13. If we miss the 8-day mark, so we're going to wait till 13 already. And when they reach 13 years old, Esav says, no way you're touching that. No bris. And so Esav remains uncircumcised. Esav today has died, never got a circumcision. Yaakov got a circumcision at 8 days old.
So how could there be any blessing for him when he doesn't even have circumcision? He doesn't even have the faith with God, so how can he expect to have blessing from being in the nation?
So wait, let's see. We'll get to that. Let's see. Okay, come on. I mean, that's not so easy. They didn't have anesthesia like today. So we're going to start building the case against Esav. And at the end, we're going to have to discuss why Yitzchak really thought he was such a good kid. Now, the kids grow up. And when they're 13, Esav starts being a huntsman. And Yaakov continues learning. And from here, our sages say, until kids grow up, you can't really tell what they are. Sometimes people like to ask about chinuch when they first get married. And they look at other couples that have sweet 7-year-olds and 9-year-olds and 11-year-olds. Well, on the one hand, Chazal told us, gam b'mal alav yitnakels now. You can tell certain things about a kid when he's young, when he's playing games. But, v'igdilu anarim, from here we derive, you want to really see where kids end up, look at the product later. Don't look at how they're sweet in the beginning.
The brothers of the bride.
Okay. So Esav at 13 starts being a wicked person, but his grandfather's still around, Avram. And so Esav does it in hiding, so no one hears about it. He makes believe he's going to yeshiva, and he's really going out to hunt. And Yaakov continues learning, and Yitzchak loves Esav, ki tzayid b'fiv. So the classical understanding of this is, Esav would come to Yitzchak and say, how do you give a tenth of charity from salt? Yitzchak would say, salt? You're worried about giving charity from salt? Must be you give charity from everything else. And Yitzchak was blinded. Esav knew how to fool his father. He didn't want his father to feel bad. I have a son who's a murderer. I have a son who's the head of the mafia. No. So to his father, he says, I have a legitimate business. We traffic garbage. We give protection to people. We deal with making people's lives more pleasurable, like Al Capone used to say. Al Capone said, I deal with life's finer amenities, and all I get is... So Esav doesn't want his father to feel bad, and Yitzchak buys into it. Our sages say, the literal understanding of Kitzayit B'fiv is that Esav would give him from the venison, the food he hunted. And the pasuk says, "Ki hashochad for a bride, ye'aver einei chachamim, will blind the eyes of the wise." And so, once a person gets a bribe, he's blinded whether he likes it or not. And Yitzchak isn't above that. And Yitzchak is literally blinded because of the bribe he takes. One understanding is that's why Yitzchak becomes blind when he gets older. And Rivka, even though ordinarily a mother sees my firstborn, he's my big boy. No. Rivka sees beyond all that, and she says, she likes Yaakov. She says, Yaakov's the one.
Because she was told, there would be evil from one of the children.
Okay. But here we see what level Rivka was on. Esav was Ish Sadeh. Sadeh is Ratshei Tevot, Shofech Dam HaAdam, as the verse states. So long as Avram's around, Esav is doing his stuff but in hiding. 2 years later, Esav's 15, Avram passes away, and now Esav comes out. Now Esav comes out of hiding, now he's publicly the hunter. And he's going through the woods one day, and Nimrod sees a very good hunter. Nimrod must be an old man by now. And Nimrod tells him, this is my forest. I hunt here. So Esav says, okay, where can I go? And Nimrod says, nowhere. I rule the forest. I rule the hunting grounds. I am the hunter. And you don't hunt. Period. Now, Mr. Mafia meets Mr. Mafia, big Mr. Mafia, and says, wait a second, I don't like this. So Nimrod says, tomorrow, you, me, we take on here. And Esav comes to his brother Yaakov and says, Rabbi, give me some advice. What do I do? I don't want to chicken out, but no one's ever taken down Nimrod. So Yaakov gives him advice. Now here, there are two different midrashim. One midrash says that this happened the day before that Esav comes in huffing and puffing. Esav came in huffing and puffing from the wrestling match with Nimrod. The other midrash says that this happened the day Esav came in. And when Yaakov tells him, I want to buy your rights to the firstborn, Esav says, tomorrow I have a wrestling match with Nimrod. I'm not going to live. You're worried about rights to the firstborn. You take the rights to the firstborn. So two different midrashim. At any rate, Yaakov tells him, look, when Adam was in the Garden of Eden, so God made him a special cloak that has all the pictures of all different wild animals and birds on it, and they look like they're alive. And when a person goes out with that, so all the animals think like it all looks real. So they come, they bow to him, and then you could easily hunt. And so long as he's wearing that, you can't win him. You want to win Nimrod, you tell him, oh, let's take off our jackets, let's really head off. And that's what Esav does. They come to the wrestling match, and Esav says, okay, I'll take off my jacket. Nimrod takes off his. He doesn't notice. He's taken off his jacket. Now, Esav wins and kills Nimrod. So, Nimrod isn't such a nice guy. Nimrod tried killing his grandfather. And notice, I thought you guys would ask this, according to Rashi, Rashi goes with the Medrash, that Nimrod was Amraphel. If Nimrod was Amraphel, then Avram already killed him. This Medrash is going with the understanding that he was not one of the four kings. You remember Amraphel? Amraphel was one of the four kings that that Avram conquered.
Avram gave chase to them, so
right?
He didn't kill them.
Okay.
So
when I was a child, the Rebbe told us, I haven't found this written in a Medrash anywhere, but the Rebbe in Cheder told us that Esav made a big show. He added a few details to the story. I haven't found this written yet, but the Rebbe said like this. He said, Nimrod was riding his horses with all his men. They're all on horses. And they're looking for Esav. Where's that wild man? And Esav's hiding. And finally Nimrod tells his men, you guys cover that clearing, I'll cover this clearing. And Esav's waiting for that. And when they split up, then Esav makes himself seen. And Nimrod says, there you are, come, I'm going to take care of you. And Esav says, are you a man? So Nimrod says, you bet, I'm going to show you. And Esav says, okay, but it's a hot day. Let's just take off our jackets. And he makes believe like it's so hot, you got to take off your jacket before you go into a wrestling match. That's what the Rebbe told us when I was in first grade. Or pre-1-8, something like that. So that's the story I heard then. I didn't see it written inside anywhere. But I'm sure it exists. I just haven't come across it yet. What I'm telling you, I saw. Like the first thing I said that it says in the Midrash. Okay, so Esav is affected by his grandfather. We have to know that sometimes grandparents can have an effect that parents can't have. From his father, Yitzchak, so he plays the game. But for so long as his grandfather is alive, he's in hiding. He's not public. He's not public enemy number one. So Esav keeps bringing him food. And it's very natural for a father to go for his elder son. That happens easily. Esav comes in from the field that day, and he's tired. He just killed Nimrod, just had a wrestling match. And Esav tells Yaakov, what you cooking? And Yaakov said, grandfather died, our father's going to eat lentils. And Esav says, give me some, just pour it in, I'm going to open my mouth, you pour it in. And Yaakov says, I want to make a deal with you first. I want you to sell me that whenever our father dies, I have the rights to the firstborn. Tell me what price you want for it, and then we'll eat. And Esav says, give me to eat, I don't care about the firstborn. You can have it, just give me to eat. And Yaakov says, fine. The question is, what rights did the rights of the firstborn entail in those days? The Torah tells us that the firstborn had a right to double. But this is the Torah's introduction. So some want to say that we know there are many concepts that existed prior to the Torah, and the Torah took those concepts and told us how to apply them correctly. So some want to say this concept of double, maybe that existed before the Torah was given. And others want to say that that even though there wasn't a right to double, But it was understood that the firstborn takes his father's position. He gets the honor, he gets all the blessings, he gets the position his father had. So that's what Yaakov tells his father when he slips in. He says, "Ani bincha bechorecha. I'm your right. I'm your rightfully belonging son. I'm the one who has a right to the blessing." And the same thing when Yosef brings his children to Yaakov to be blessed. Yaakov's about, he puts his hand like this over their heads. And Yosef says, "No, Zeha Bechor. This is the one that has the right to the blessings." At which point Yaakov tells Yosef, "Yadati ibn Yadati." No, no, no. It's not the way you think. So Esav says to Yaakov, you know, the firstborn is going to have a right to serve in the temple. Now tell me, Yaakov, he tells him, philosophically, I want to understand something. If I'm a really, really good person, I serve all these sacrifices. When my day comes, am I going to live or die? I'm going to die, right, Yaakov? You're not naive enough to think that just because you serve God, you're not going to die. You're going to die in the end, right? And then we all die. Hina nochi olech lamut. At the end, we're all going to die. So if we're all going to die, lam ze liv chora? Why do I have to spend my time in the temple serving God? It's not like He's going to save me from death. And then I'm going to die anyway. So you take the rights. And Yaakov, Vayivez Esav Tabchora, Esav mocked the rights to be a servant of God. Yaakov was cognizant that this was Esav's attitude. That's why Yaakov had this sale. Yaakov said, it's not right. You should have this right. This is the way you view it. Fine, I want it. So, from here we derive that if there's a wicked person who has a Sefer Torah or some other mitzvah, and he doesn't value it, we try to get it from him. We try to purchase it. We try to get it. We try, like Yaakov tried, to get it away, and he doesn't value it. So sometimes it's not difficult, just like Esav gave up on it.
But halakhically, there's no selling the grip, right?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't think you're right. I think just like when a couple's married, there's a concept of selling tovat hana'a, just like stocks. Let's say a woman's married to Bill Gates. Okay, he signed in the ksuba. You get $350 million if I die or if I divorce you. Now she could come to the stock market and say, "Who wants to bid on the right for this?" Now it's not worth $350,000 because she might die first. So it's worth maybe $100,000. That's called tovat hana'a. A woman has a right to sell her portion in ksuba, as does a man, right? If she dies, he inherits her. So he says, "Look, I just married Helmsley. Helmsley Towers, if she dies first, they all become mine. You want my right in Helmsley Towers? Okay, how much is it worth, that gamble? How much is it worth for you?" So by the same token, the Rishonim say, that's what happened here. Yaakov said, "You think you're going to die before dad, and this is worthless. I'm willing to gamble that if dad dies first, I get your right in the inheritance to double." And so maybe you could do that.
How about the firstborn doing
the service in the temple, right. According to that pshat, you have to say this is all spiritual, because in this time the Torah wasn't yet given, which we'll discuss at greater length later, hopefully. The Torah wasn't given. What does that mean, sacrifices? Right, but we don't see this concept implemented here. Right, that pshat you have to go with a lot of drush. So Esav comes in, vayochal, he eats without making a bracha, vayesh, he drinks without making a bracha, vayokam, he gets up and he doesn't make a bracha, achrona, vayelach, and he goes off without a yarmulke, he is walking. That's Esav, and this has become like a coined term, vayochal, vayesh, vayakam, vayelach, for someone who eats like an animal. If you eat and you can't see that your God is with you when you're eating, if you don't make a blessing before, you don't make a blessing after, you don't say thank you, you say just pour it down, halitainina, pour it in, stuff it in, I'm hungry. So this is like the prototype of that, Asa. So it's interesting that Yaakov makes him swear. What's Asa's vow worth? It seems like it was worth something to him. He makes him swear that he'll never go back on it. He won't ever come and claim that this didn't happen. Yaakov gives him to eat, and he mocks it. And that's why people start mocking Esav. They said, "Look, what a fool. For a pot of lentils, he sold all his rights to the firstborn." And Esav's getting some flack for this. Why was Esav so willing to relinquish his rights to the firstborn? So we offered a few pshatim. There's one pshat which is very controversial. It's worth hearing. The Ibn Ezra says, let's look at this parsha from a bird's eye view. If Yitzchak is as wealthy as his father was, why does he need his son to bring him venison? His servants can get him venison. It's a problem to get venison. He can't get deer. His son has to go and bring him deer. Later on in the parsha, we're going to see that Yaakov is going to leave his father. And when he leaves, all he has is a staff. What, your son is leaving? He's going to another country, and you send him with the stick for the road. You don't give him any money? Yaakov comes to his uncle Laban and he doesn't have a penny? When Yaakov wants to come in before his father, his mother says, ooh, your brother has a good suit. I'll give you the good suit your brother has. Where'd all the wealth go? So the Ibn Ezra says that Yitzhak wasn't as successful as Avram was. And Yitzhak lost all his wealth. And so when Esav comes to Yaakov, Esav says, there's nothing to inherit. There is no inheritance. What do I care? You take the firstborn. What am I interested? Dad doesn't have a penny. I'm bringing him his food. I don't need the rights to the firstborn. And then, later on, Yitzhak became wealthy and then lost it again. That's how the Ibn Ezra says, and the Ramban goes out against that. He says, no way. The forefathers were always blessed, and they were always wealthy. The Ramban doesn't agree with that. Stole which money? That I doesn't say that. I don't know. So Yitzchak had always heard that when his dad went down to Egypt, he became very wealthy. So now that there's a famine, Yitzchak thinks, I'll go down to Egypt too. And he begins by going to Avimelech, the son of Avimelech, whose father had been by. And he's hoping that there's a treaty between our families. Avimelech's going to help me out, and I won't have to go down to Egypt. When Yitzchak shows up, the people start talking. His dad played the trick. We all suffered. We all got sick. His dad prayed for us. And so they don't touch him. They stay away from him. But the people around, they start asking about Rivka. And he automatically says, she's my sister. And Avimelech recognizes the danger and he peeks and he sees what's going on and he says, this can't go. Now here there's a very interesting halachic question. There was once a couple that every time she became pregnant, she'd miscarry. And so they decided that the reason she's miscarrying is because they're living in this extended family and all the relatives, every time they see her get pregnant, they look at her with the evil eye and they're causing her to miscarry. So they decided between themselves that when a wife is a nida, when a couple are prohibited from having relations together because she's having her cycle, so there are certain prohibitions that extend beyond just having relations. They're not allowed to pass things from hand to hand. He's not allowed to eat the remnants of her food. There are all kinds of halachot. They're not allowed to sit on the same bed. He's not allowed to sit on her bed. The beds have to be separate. There are many halachot, aside from the fact that they're not allowed to touch. So they decided, you know what? We're going to act as though we're prohibited, as though I'm still a nida. And this way, no, I ever became pregnant. And this way, we'll prevent Dayan Ahav from us. Because no, I'm pregnant. So, in those days still, and today also, it's preferable that a woman has special clothing that she wears only during that period, clothing that are slightly less attractive. So, they do this, and then they think, wait a second. Basically, we're making a declaration that she's a nida. How can we live together as husband and wife if we're making this halachic declaration that she's prohibited? And they send the question to the Rama. Rav Moshe Isserles got this question. And one of the things the Rama deals with in that question is he says, well, how did Yitzchak do it? Yitzchak's telling everyone she's my sister and inside the house they're living like husband and wife. Well, if making a declaration causes that now we have to treat it this way halachically, so then Yitzchak should have at least taken care of that so long as they're in Philistine territory, they don't live together. They're making this declaration. She's my sister. And we see they did. That's one stage in the responsa. So let's continue.
Wait, what happened to the other couple?
it doesn't say the end of the story in the responsa. It says what his halachic conclusion is, not whether the child lived or not. Yitzhak is told, do not go down to Egypt. And here the Ramban gives us insight into understanding Maaseh Avot Siman Nebanim. We know that the actions of our forefathers are representative of what would happen to us. So Avram went down to Egypt. That represents the generation that went down to exile, to servitude in Egypt. Yitzhak does not go down to Egypt. He goes back to where his father was in Philistine territory. So too, when we went to our first exile, we went to the land where our forefather Avram came from, Babylon, right? Avram came from Ur Kasdim. He came from Babylon. Yitzhak traveled because of famine. We ended up going to that first exile from Israel because of the famine. They did not touch Rebekah. They didn't touch Rivka. So too, when we were in Babylon, we were free men. We weren't in servitude. They proclaimed, whoever touches this man, you have to respect the man, don't touch him and his wife. So too, we find that Jews had high positions in the aristocracy in Babylon.
Even Mordechai, he was like one of the top advisors to Ahasuerus, even though the Haman was the highest, but Mordechai knew Samson.
Yeah.
This is after he leaves Abimelech, right?
He hasn't yet left.
So, I'm confused. There's one portion in the Pasuk that says, that I'm a little confused. It says Abimelech is the king of Gerar, so
king of Plishtim.
I'm under the assumption that he goes to Gerar. But also it says, and maybe it's improperly worded, that the king of Gerar came to him.
Nah. Says Avimelech Melech Pilishtim. Where does it say king of Gerar? It says king of Pilishtim, not king of Gerar. I don't know. In the Pasuk it says king of Plishtim, not king of Gerar. What I remember.
That he's not the king of Gerar. I'm not sure it exactly says in the Pasuk, but it says that the king of Gerar came to him.
He did. Avimelech came to his house and peeked in and saw what was going on.
So is he in
Yeah. But he doesn't live by the king. The king left his house and peeked at the Yitzhak's house. The king was obviously very interested in taking Rivka, but was very scared of what had happened. So he's spying out.
He's already had one way.
Right. According to one understanding, it's the same king. According to another understanding, it's the son. We're going to see in a minute. So Yitzchak stays over there, and God tells him, I will establish my promise with you. You know, that's like the politicians. They say, I made a promise, but did I promise to keep my promise? Right? God says, I will keep my promise. God has to say he's going to keep his promise? What does that mean? So this was in effect as though God was making the same promise to Yitzhak. God later on describes the land as the land that he promised Avram and promised Yitzhak and promised Yaakov. This is as though God's promising Yitzhak. And why is that important? Because it's as though God's saying each one by his own merit could have had this land. We often think of Yitzhak, yeah, he's Avram's son. Yaakov, he was part of the lineage. No, God makes each one his own promise, telling us each one was fitting for it. And then we have an interesting pasuk which you guys should have a lot of questions about. God says, I'm maintaining the pact with you because Avram kept my mitzvos, chokosai, mishmarti, torosai. What's going on here? You want to tell me Avram kept the Torah? You're right. There are midrashim that say Avram kept even Erev Tavshilin. Yaakov kept even Erev Tavshilin. But then how come later generations didn't? How come, if this is the thing that Avram's teaching his offsprings, how come we find that Yaakov married two sisters? According to our sages, all four were sisters. Yaakov established a matzeva. The Torah prohibits making a one-stone altar. Amram married his aunt. That's prohibited. Moshe establishes 12 matzevot. The Torah prohibits that.
12 matzevot what?
We'll get there, Mirat Hashem.
What's
the 12? So, one... when we get there. So, one understanding is that they kept the things like the Noahites. Avram kept the laws of Avodah Zarah very, very well. Our sages say his Masechet Avodah Zarah had 400 chapters. He gave charity, so they gave charity as best as they could. They were careful with women that Nohad is prohibited to marry, and they went to the second degree with that. They were careful with the mitzvos, not to steal, not to kill. They were extra careful with that. They kept the chukim. What chukim do you have? Eiver Minachai is a chuk. You kill an animal, but before it's dead, you start cutting it up. That food's prohibited. That's Eiver Minachai. Is there logic to it? Kilayim is prohibited for a non-Jew. He's not allowed to crossbreed animals directly by placing one on top of the other or by putting together different trees. So that's what they kept, the laws of Avodah Zarah. But the Ramban here has a very important chidush, and he says that they kept the Torah in the land of Israel. The Torah is connected to the land of Israel. And we find that the Jews, when they were exiled from Israel, had a question, do we have to still keep the Torah? And Yechezkel, I tell him, yeah, you still have to keep the Torah. But there would be room to think that the Torah is so connected with the land of Israel that you only keep it here. That's why the Torah has the same, the Hayam Shema. Even when you're exiled, keep the Torah. Even though the Torah is very, very connected to Eretz Yisrael, but it's still relevant in Chutz Eretz. You still have to keep it. So the Ramban says, yeah, that's true once the Torah is given. But before the Torah is given, the forefathers only kept it in the land of Israel. So Yaakov marries the sisters in Chutz Eretz. And before he enters the land of Israel, Rachel has to die. Last in, first out, right? So this is the Ramban's tremendous chidush. We have 20 minutes till we have to pause. Do you guys mind if you open the windows? Maybe some heads will pop back up. Shukach. Sorry, Ephraim.
No, even I am okay.
Okay. Oh. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm more sensible.
I didn't get that answer that we're recording, right?
Okay. Yitzchak, because all his wealth is external, runs into problems. Avimelech comes to him and tells him, you seem more wealthy than me. And this is something we have to think about. When Jews live in Chutz Aretz, they have to think about not showing off their wealth. A person is supposed to try and be modest, and otherwise it causes problems. Like Avimelech came and said, you have to leave. They come, they start digging water, and they find an underground stream. Along come the shepherds from Gerar, and they say, that's water that comes from our river. If you take water from that well, you're taking water from our river. And the pasuk attests to the fact that that was a lie. One well after another, but when it happens the second time, Yitzchak says, this is anti-Semitism. And he calls that well anti-Semitism. He says, sitna. This second well is just hatred. Now I say it's just sitna. It's just hatred. It's pure hatred. The first well I dug, I thought maybe there's a misunderstanding. Maybe they really think they own this water. But if they're doing it the second well, so now I see there's hatred.
The first one was Esek.
He said, you know, we're dealing. They claim this way, I claim that way. Okay. By the second well, he said, this isn't a coincidence. And the Ramban says, the Torah tells us the stories of these wells because they're a reference to the temples. The first temple, there were many arguments and wars, and that's why it's Esek. In the second well, there was great enmity. That's because in the second temple, we really had, from within the land of Israel, people writing letters against us. They wrote, Katvu Sitna, the verse says in Ezra, and they caused us to ultimately have the second temple to be destroyed. And the third well is called Rehovot, because the third temple is going to be built without fights, and ultimately we will flourish in the land, that all the nations will recognize that this is the way to go. God tells Yitzchak, don't be scared. Yitzchak's a little bit scared, and this is natural. I have a friend that... There are two stories. There's one guy who was in camp. In the middle of the night, they decided to play a trick on him. He was sleeping. They picked up his bed, carried it to the middle of the woods, and everyone put on... everyone put on their talis and started walking around his bed with candles. So they're all wearing talisim, white kittels, and carrying candles in the middle of the dark woods.
So
and the guy wakes up, right? And the guy wakes up and sees them. And to make a long story short, he's still getting psychiatric treatment today.
I want to see.
No, I'm not joking. He's still, it's not funny. The guy is still getting psychiatric treatment today. He flipped out. He flipped out. The second story. The second story is a guy who people want to gang up on him to take his money, and they decided to convince him that he flipped out. So they got a lot of people in on it. This is a real story. He had a lot of money. And they start telling him, you have to see a shrink. You're not well. And at some point, he started doubting his own sanity. Because if everyone around you starts telling you, you know, you're not well, you're not, something's off. So at some point, we start doubting ourselves. Yitzchak has had this issue where Avimelech comes and tells him, get out. And now the shepherds, one after another, are having fights with him. And Yitzchak's worried. He's saying, you know, maybe they're all going to come to war against me. He doesn't doubt that he's right. But he's starting to wonder whether he's going to make it out of this alive. And so God appears and tells him, don't worry, I'm going to make you even better off. And now Yitzchak gets a gift that even Avram didn't get, that Avimelech comes with the whole entourage to him. And Avimelech's nervous. Because Avimelech says, you know, there's a reason why my father made a pact with his father. Because God promised him this land. And his father was very powerful, and he's very powerful. You know, the Midrash says, Og Melech HaBashan was tall enough to have the clouds as a necklace around his neck. Avram once was upset at him and yelled at him. And Og got so scared he dropped a tooth. He dropped a tooth. Avram made, he carved it out into a throne, and that was Avram's throne, his bed, different versions in the Midrash.
His tooth.
But when Avram yelled at him, he was scared. Avram was able to take on four kings. Yitzchak was no weakling.
Four.
So Yitzchak, they're also scared of. And they say, you know, Yitzchak's going to say, we kicked him out of the land. We broke the treaty first. Now, if he ever wants to wipe us out, he can. And so Avimelech is pressured to come and reinstate the treaty. And the Midrash says, Avimelech's claim to Yitzchak is the equivalent of the story of a lion who got a bone stuck in his throat. And he lets out a roar and he says, which animal will take it out, I'll give him a great gift. And along comes a bird with a long neck, and the bird sticks its neck deep into the lion's throat and takes out the bone. And after he's taken it out, he says to the lion, where's my big gift? And the lion says, you mean it's not enough that I didn't eat you? I gave you a very big gift. You're still alive. You were in my throat, in a lion's throat, and you came out alive. So Avimelech says the same thing to Yitzchak. What? Look what we did to you. You were by us. You made it out in peace. You know, when people usually come through our town, they don't make it out in peace. Chazal tells a special prayer that our sages instituted. When you go into a town, you go into a city that you don't know, you have to say a special prayer that they don't start making all kinds of allegations against. You know, there were places in the Midwest when people would be traveling cross country, or places when you'd be traveling down to Florida, that the police were corrupt. You'd come into their territory, they'd pull you over, put you in jail. What were you doing? You were speeding. Now go fight them. You want to get a lawyer? Go get a lawyer. You say you weren't speeding? For $500, we'll agree with you that you weren't speeding. You want? You could stay here. Go get a lawyer. We'll argue in court. Maybe you'll win. So there were towns that did this. And Chazal tell us that in Chazal's time, it was rampant. You'd walk into a city, you'd have to make a prayer. God, let me get through the gates. Let me get by the guards in peace. Let it be that they don't make up a story about me. And when you'd want to leave the city, you got into the city, you'd say a prayer of thanks, and then another prayer when you wanted to leave, and another prayer when you made it out in peace. Four prayers when you wanted to cross the city. Chazal instituted. So Avimelech tells Yitzchak, don't take it for granted, you made it out in peace. Avimelech tells him, look, we didn't touch you, we didn't take your wife. We were good to you. We commanded everyone to stay away from you. And we sent you out in peace. It wasn't easy. We saw you with all this wealth, and we let you go. So we want to make a treaty. They were scared, or they were scared for future generations. Esav marries women, and here we have a very important lesson. Esav's women start sacrificing to their idols, and it harms Yitzchak more than it harms Rivka. According to one understanding, that's what blinded Yitzchak, the incense they made for their idols. Why does it harm Yitzchak more than Rivka?
Because Rivka was growing up doing things.
So one understanding is what Avram just said, that Rivka grew up with this in her home. And this is something that we should know, that when we get married, there are going to be things that we should be sensitive to, but will not be sensitive to, will not be as sensitive as we should be to those things because we didn't grow up with them. So if a guy didn't grow up with the concept that on Yom Tov you have to be in Israel and at home and with the family, so when he has to go away for business, he'll say, well, what's wrong? So I'll spend Pesach out in the Caribbean. That's where I have my business. And the wife, who grew up in a normal Jewish home, is going to say, you're nuts. That's not a Jewish Yom Tov. That's not a Jewish home. You can't do that. We have to recognize we're not sensitive. When Rus tells Naomi, in the book of Rus, Rus tells Naomi, I'll go out and I'll harvest behind the guys and I'll collect the stalks that fall. Now this is Rus, mind you, who's extra modest. She's extra pious. But slip of the tongue, she'll gather behind the guys. For her, she's used to being around guys. That's where she comes from. And Naomi tells her, no. You go, you gather behind the girls. Naomi just makes a slight correction because it's a sensitivity that Rus didn't have. So Rivka is a huge tzedekes. But when they're serving to idols, it doesn't bother so much. You know, people who grew up with a TV, when they see TV, okay. People who grew up and they walked around seeing all the billboards of immodest women, they see it, they say, okay. People who grew up in more modest places, so they see it, and they say, what's going on here? Why are they posting that? I mean, there was a girl who went with her mother once, and they saw a salon for kalas. So the girl asked her mother, how come the kala has a short sleeve? So the mother said, she doesn't have enough money to buy a longer sleeve. So from that day on, every time they'd see a billboard or something, the girl would turn to her mother and say, poor girl, even for the picture she didn't have money for a longer sleeve. Yeah, that's a perspective. So we have to recognize sometimes we don't have the right perspective because
that's why I don't like going
our sensitivities have been dulled. There's another understanding in the Midrash that if you take an earthenware vessel made of earth, and you take a vessel that's made of bones, the bone vessel is going to bash up the earthenware vessel. If you want to take a shovel and you make it out of earth, it's not going to dig into the ground. But if you make a shovel out of bones, that shovel will be able to break through the ground. Well, us men, we're made of earth. God took earth and put us together. The women, they're made of our bones. So they're made from our rib. So when a woman takes on a woman will win. A man is like an earthenware vessel against the bone vessel. That's what Chazal say. You clash them together, the earthenware goes crack. But when a woman takes on a woman, then you have a real fair fight. So guys, you should know this. This is true in business also. Women are different than men. And if a man thinks he's more powerful than a woman, well, usually he's got another thing coming. So Chazal tell us that when the daughter-in-laws are problematic, they can harm Yitzchak more than they can harm Rivka. Because Rivka, she's a woman too. A woman could take on a woman. Yitzchak, his eyesight is going. Our sages tell us, do not look at a wicked person. He who looks at a wicked person loses his eyesight. Yitzchak used to look at Esav, he lost his eyesight. Abimelech, when Sarah left him, he cursed her.
Angels cried in his face.
It's been so many years, I forgot. You're right.
The combination of all of the factors.
Okay. So, Yitzchak calls in Esav and says, bring me in the good food, so I'm going to be able to bless you when I eat it. And here we see that when we get good food, it can make us feel better, and we're going to be able to bless more. And this is a message to the females in our audience. Before you have to discuss something with your husbands, give them something good to eat. The way the man's heart is through his stomach is partially true. There's a lot of truth there. Let's just say that when his stomach's hungry, his heart doesn't work. After you fill it, you might not have gotten to his heart. But you won't get to his heart when his stomach's empty. And this is on a more spiritual level, so this is why we have the custom that we give out candies at a bar mitzvah and at a ofrof. The ancient custom used to be that the chatan or chatan bar mitzvah would stand with a basket of sweets and he'd give every person a sweet and the person would give him a blessing. And the reason is that whenever we attend the simcha, Ramchal writes, there's no person who attends his friend's wedding and doesn't feel a pinch of sadness. It's him, it's not me. we have a hard time being positive for other people. And as positive as we are, it's still difficult. So when we have a bar mitzvah or a chasana, it's difficult to think totally positive for the other person. So the person gives us a candy and we make a blessing and we put the sweets in our mouth. That minute, those sweets can make us forget all the bad feelings that we have, and we can give them a bracha with real intent. A little bit of sweets. It's always a good idea. Okay, we used to give them out in this class. We got to start again. I don't know, but it seems to be the way Hashem made us. I don't know. So we know that in order for a person to have prophecy and correct prayer, a person always has to be at peace with himself, and part of it is to get rid of any physical hindrance. So Yitzchak says, you know, after Alit, I'm going to be in a good spirit and I'm going to have Ruach Kodesh and be able to bless you. So Yitzchak calls in Esav to give him the bracha, and he doesn't know the prophecy that Rivka had. And God wants Yitzchak to mess up here, because if it were left in Yitzchak's hands, if Yitzchak knew about that prophecy, so Yitzchak would say, yeah, but I love Esav. I don't want to give all these blessings to Yaakov. Let's leave things be. Just like Avram said, I'm not blessing Yitzchak, because Yitzchak's going to have two children, one of them is wicked and one's not. So if a person is given the responsibility of taking care of a garden, and the king tells him, you see this tree? This tree, I want it to grow well. Take care of it. And he comes to the tree and he sees some poison growing around the tree. And he says, if I water the tree, I can't water the tree without watering the poison. And I can't hack down the poison without hacking down the tree. How do I take care of such a tree? And he says, you know what? I'll wait till the owner of the garden comes and let him take care of this. So too Avram said. He said, I have this Yitzchak. Yitzchak has poison and life within him. He has Yaakov and Esav coming forward. I can't give him the blessing the way I'd like to, because if I do, it'll go on Esav as well. So Avram says, God, I'm leaving it up to you. You decide how to give out the blessings. Well, Yitzchak wouldn't have wanted to give the blessings to Yaakov alone, because Yitzchak really wanted Esav. So God made it that Yitzchak thought he was getting Esav, because Yitzchak, according to himself, wouldn't have given the blessings to Yaakov. Had Yitzchak known the prophecy that Rivka heard, he wouldn't have given it to Yaakov. So Rivka calls him in, and she tells Yaakov, and this is the one time that we have the term Lifnei Hashem, she tells Yaakov, your father wants to bless Esav Lifnei Hashem. This is the only time in this segment of the parasha where this is used. And she's stressing to Yaakov, this isn't a game, Yaakov. Everything's at risk right now. If you go in there, then you have a future. If you stay away, Yitzchak's going to bless him with Ruach HaKodesh. This is Lifnei Hashem. This isn't like until now, every time Esav would come in and Yitzchak would say, thank you, Esav, you're great and you should be blessed. This isn't that. This is a special thing. Yitzchak's calling him in to bless him Lifnei Hashem. He's giving over the blessings of Avram, the future of who's going to be the Jewish people, the land of Israel. You have to go in, Yaakov. And
this is the time when it comes. This rising, whatever.
Yeah. And Yaakov says, but what happens when my father hugs me? Our sages ask, how can a husband be with his wife at night? How does he know it's she? How can a blind man get married? How does he know it's his wife? So our sages tell us we can rely on the testimony of voice. A person can say, I recognize the other person's voice. Even though I don't see him, I know his voice. And so the Ramban questions, why was Yaakov so worried about everything else? What about his voice? And the Ramban offers a pshat which sounds slightly humorous. He says, either they had a similar voice, or Yaakov knew how to change his voice. You know, some people know how to sound like all kinds of things, right? Those who do the cartoons. So maybe Yaakov knew, he knew how to mimic Esau's voice. That's what the Ramban offers, seriously. He says, I don't know. Why wasn't Yaakov worried about that? And he says,
that would be deceiving.
You know, he certainly was deceiving. Okay.
But the Torah said it's a. Yitzchak said it's a voice of Yaakov, but the hands are hands.
So you see, as much as he thought he'd get away with it, he didn't. Yitzchak, when he sees what's going on, he says, "Come, I want to feel you." He heard the voice, and The question is, Rashi says, Yitzchak said Esav doesn't use God's name frequently. Well, if he was cognizant of that, like you asked earlier, then how didn't he know that Esav wasn't a tzaddik? And the answer that's offered is that the Yitzchak knew that Esav doesn't say God's name frequently. But he thought, he's always hunting. He's in dirty places. Maybe he's gotten used to not saying God's name because he doesn't want to desecrate it. And it's amazing. You see it all the time with parents. I had a situation where there was a child who was making problems. And at some point, I gave up. I called the parents in and I said, I'm going to tell you what's going on. The only problem is that you're not going to believe me because I've been calling you throughout the year and I see you're not listening to me. So I basically decided I don't know how to explain this to you, so I just want to ask you to start saving money. So they said, why should we save money? I said, because you're going to need it for bail. Save money because it's only a matter of a month, a year. He's going to be in jail and you're going to have to pay bail, and he's going to be in jail again, you're going to have to pay bail. So just start saving. Start saving because you're going to need to bail him out of jail a lot now. That was all I said. It didn't get me anywhere. I thought maybe that would move them. So they started saying, yeah, my wife does this wrong. And she said, no, my husband does that wrong. And, you know, each one threw the blame at the other and they got nowhere. And halvai, the kid is out of jail, but I doubt it. A parent can deceive himself. And so Yitzchak is constantly deceiving himself. Even when he sees, he recognizes Yaakov's voice. Yaakov speaks this way, but he thinks, yeah, there's a good reason why he's not. And Hakol Kol Yaakov, that's become the formula for the Jewish people. Hakel, it's written, there's no Vav. When we're lenient in Kol Yaakov, when we're lenient in our learning Torah, in our prayer, then there's the threat of Hayadayim Yedei Esav.
Hello.
Mine. Sorry, I rushed into here. I doubt it. We'll check. Sorry.
He did actually know it was Yaakov.
So, Hakol Kol Yaakov is written Hakel. When we're lenient in Kol Yaakov, in the voice and our strength, the voice of Yaakov, learning Torah and prayer, so then we have the threat of Yadayim Yedei Esav, they're taking the rule. And Esav, on the one hand, was given the ability to have Yadayim, but on the other hand, Yadayim are very limited. Notice that when King Saul is praised, he's praised with archery. Vayomer lelamedet b'nei Yehuda kashet. Archery, you could hit afar. With hands, you can only tackle what's near. And at the same time that Esav has the ability to tackle things with his hands, it's only things that are near. He was limited. But Yaakov was given a kol. Prayer, that can cover the world. In prayer, God says, if you move the heavens, then you've moved the world. What blessings does Yaakov get? If you count them, you'll notice there are 10. And they correspond to the 10 sayings with which Hashem created the world and the 10 dibros. Yaakov is going to be blessed 7 times throughout his lifetime. And so too Avram was blessed 7 times throughout his lifetime. And corresponding to that, we have 7 holidays in a year. We have the Shabbos, we have Pesach, Shavuos, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Shmini Atzeres. That's 7. What's his blessing? You should be blessed from the dew in heaven. Well, really, everyone gets dew. What kind of blessing is that? So the blessing was, you should have Rov Dagan V'Tirosh. You should have a lot of plenty, and that should stem from the dew and from the ground. In Yaakov's blessing, we see God's name. When Esav gets a blessing, God's name isn't there. There's a distinct difference between their blessings. and that is because Yaakov's blessing is eternal. Yaakov's blessing, the ground and the dew are just servants that give forth the blessing, but the one whose blessing is God. When Esav gets his blessing, the fact that God's name is omitted is a critical difference. That means, I'm blessing the ground, I'm blessing the dew, I'm blessing you. But the blessing is connected to the physical, it's not connected to God. And so Esav, because he... Because Esav is not eternal, his blessing is connected to things which are not eternal.
Just like Nachash, because Hashem said, I don't want to be having anything with you, so I'm giving you, you're going to be on the belly and all of it is the food, And the same thing with Esav.
Okay. Yitzchak, Yaakov is on his way out, and he's standing in the dark room with his father, who doesn't see well and is feels better in the dark. Esav is coming in from the outside, from the light. Esav usually catches things in a jiffy, but now the malachim have been helping Yaakov. Every time Esav catches a deer, the malachim free it. Esav wants to get a pair. Every time he catches one, he goes to catch the other, the malachim free one. And Esav's busy and he's having the time of his life. He never had such a thing. He's a hunter. He knows how to hunt. How could it be that he's not having success? But Yaakov was supposed to get these blessings. Yaakov sees Esav coming as he's on his way out. He's almost a dead man. He stands behind the door, and Esav, who's coming in from the light, doesn't see him, walks right by him, and Yaakov slips out. When Esav walks in, Yitzchak gets a tremendous fear. Twice in his life, Yitzchak was scared. Once, when he was tied hands and feet, and he saw the knife coming towards his neck, in the Akedah. And the second time here. And this was a bigger fear. Here it says, Charada gdolad me'od. He had a bigger fear here. When suddenly he sees, my whole life, I've been misunderstanding. Esav is a Rasha. Esav walked in. Mi eifo hu atzatzayid. What's going on here? Mi eifo, I see Gehenim here. Mi eifo, who's going to Gehenim? Is it Esav or Yaakov? And the Ruach HaKodesh answered him, Watzad Tzayid, it's your hunter there. The hunter's going to Gehenim. And that's why when Yitzchak tells Esav, I can't help him, he uses the same word. Ulecha, and to you, Eifo, where can I help you? You're ending up in perdition. I can't help you, Esav. We see that Yitzchak was more scared about his children than about himself. And that's the nature of a person, to be more scared for his children than himself. So that we discussed in the story of Akedah. Sorry. Yitzchak has to concede. He says, Gam Baruch Yeh. I see that God has approved this blessing. And the only thing Esav gets is Vayak Asher Tarid. When you suffer too much, there's a warning to the Jewish people not to make Esav suffer too much. And that's why in heavens they were upset at David when he spent 6 months wiping out Esav. So in heavens they said, we won't count those 6 months as part of your kingdom. They don't get enumerated when we have the enumeration of King David's kingdom. And Esav is warned. He's been given the blessing of being king and that you will be a servant. Two things, because Yehuda was king and yet all the Jews aren't considered his slaves. He's considered our king. Yaakov was given both. Both that he's king and that all his siblings are slaves. We're out of time, so we're going to end with a thought. Esav let out a yell, and his yell lasted for a long time. His yell was so meaningful that part of his blessing was, when you yell, Vayak Asher Tarid, you'll overcome Yaakov. Our sages say that payback time was in Purim. Esav yelled out, Vayizak Zaka Gedola, so too Mordechai called out, Vayizak Zaka Gedola Umara. Mordechai yelled in the cities of Shushan. It's worth noting that even a wicked person like Esav, when his yell comes from the heart, it moves the heavens for centuries later.
But how to shut and up
by the same token, we have to think that we, who Baruch Hashem have mitzvot, we definitely can move the heavens. There's nothing that our tefillot can't overcome, and we have a responsibility to take advantage of Hakol Kol Yaakov. Shabbat Shalom.
Okay, but how...